Hey, welcome to Meat House. Jeff here.
Chris here.
All right. It's another nice, hot
weekend. Well, humid. Know. I'm better inside than outside. Welcome to Meat House.
And hey, happy 4th of July to our listeners there. It's, you know, crazy, crazy summer.
Yeah.
Everybody's busy, but thank you guys for taking a little bit of time out of your day to sit down and talk meat with us, because you know, we're enjoying just hanging out, having some meat together.
First order of business, our listeners.
Yeah, thank you guys. Like we just said, thank you.
Yeah, thank
we
you very much.
See the counts coming. Mm-hmm. Everybody gets busy around the summertime. There's so much to do, as far as not just, you know, the kids are home, so they need stuff to do, and they need their clubs and their sports and their things like that. There's, you know, more yard work to be done, and there's vacations and family stuff. And so
if you're taking the time to listen to us, makes all that you're doing.
Right.
Thank you.
We're still kicking out this content because we think it's important. We like it. And, you know, the fact that you guys are listening and tuning in, that means the world to us.
Means the world to us.
Thank you.
And we're having a horrible amount of fun. Horrible amount of fun. This is
it. All right. Doesn't hurt that we get to drink a lot while we're doing it either.
All right. So, and next, of course, is Bacchus and Barleycorn.
Yes.
Jake and his buddies there. Great people, good information, great supplies and quality.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic sources for all the fermentation and, you know, the various needs of the home brewer, homesteader kind of thing that I've got going on here with my chickens and bees and things like that. Yeah.
But I will tell you that last time I went in there, he told me about he has a fermentation vessel there to make essential oil.
I'll be damned.
And I'm sitting there, dude, what? Oh, thank you. It's just what I need to know.
Yeah. That's one more thing that, as if the meat and wine and beer and cider and all that was not enough. There's also like cheese and kombucha and.
And now essential oil. I mean.
More stuff you're going to get me in trouble with.
Oh my gosh. I mean, great people. Love it. You know, pull up to the bar, sit in a chair, have a class with them. Good people. Love them to death. And they're dedicated sponsors of our program since the beginning of this new start.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And hey, their prices are competitive as hell, but you can try the promo code MHP10.
MHP10.
10% off your program.
Your online order.
Yes.
And it's much appreciated by us and Bacchus.
Absolutely.
So the wine of the day is, okay, a couple weeks ago I brought in my blueberry cinnamon.
Yes.
This time I brought in my Earl Grey Moonlight.
Yes. You got that tea at the city market here in town,
yes,
right? I buy the same tea. It's really nice.
Yeah. Now, the difference between Earl Grey and Earl Grey Moonlight is it has notes of lavender and vanilla in the tea. And I was inspired by a guy we met at Valkyrie named Tanner.
Okay, yeah.
Tanner Glass, he and his wife brought there, he actually got a medal for his Earl Grey Mead.
Nice.
And I said, I remember that, yeah. That never crossed my mind. You could do that. So as soon as he brought that in, I said, guess what I do when I got home? Here it is. So give this a pop here. There you go, Jeff.
Thanks, sir.
A clear straw, golden straw color.
Yeah, medium straw, medium amber, kind of.
No legs, I can see.
Yeah, no. And again, these are just Jeff's dishwasher. They're not, you know, particularly like hand cleaned or anything like that. So,
and they're just drinking glasses. They're not using actual wine or mead glasses here. So,
smells pretty light.
Mm-hmm. Now I put 2 ounces of the Earl Grey Moonlight tea in the container for 2.5 days.
Is this a single gallon batch? Or?
This was a, single gallon batch.
Okay.
And the half day was actually an accident. I was trying to pull out in two, but things got busy and I.
Okay. There's not a lot on the smell. Not honey. A little bit of like earthiness on the nose, but it's probably just like a tea smell.
So what do you think about the taste? This is much more profound than when I first tasted it out of the bucket.
Mm-hmm. The vanilla comes through more than anything else, I think, which is weird for a
Earl Grey tea.
Yeah, because it's and vanilla is such a vanilla is that the supporting actor that kind of raises everybody up without taking a lot of credit for itself.
Yeah, but one it's taking a little higher role.
Yeah, it's a very vanilla forward.
I don't taste any lavender. I don't know if you do.
I don't get it either. The vanilla is far more aromatic than anything else. I was hoping for like a little lavender is more aromatic than flavor,
Yeah, I got that, but
right? But
by the same token, I didn't mix the tea.
right. I was hoping if I like, took a nice swallow and then like a breath in or something like that, I would get more lavender in the aromatic kind of that post-swallow breath. No,
It's not
I'm not
there.
really seeing it. The tea itself, the black tea, is also not as strong. It's kind of there, but tea in a mead tends to go more in the light tannin note.
But this has a distinctive tea tannin to it. You can
Yes,
feel that very
you can
distinctly.
feel it. It's just not a flavor component as strongly as it is
No, it's not.
a mouthfeel and a tannin contributor. There's a good amount of acid to this too,
Yeah.
and I don't know if that's from your honey choice. I'm assuming this is just like
This is my base honey.
right, yeah.
Now, this was, again, experimental batch. It's hard for me to guess on the first round. This is the first round.
Sure. I mean,
I mean, it's got a good, nice. If I called it a vanilla mead, I'd be
yeah.
more accurate.
If you entered this into a competition as vanilla mead, no one would bat an eyelash. It has a balance that is nice. The acid, the tannin, they're both strong. The sweetness is there. It could maybe go a little bit more without, if you added like a
Quarter cup of honey from here.
Little extra honey without adding too much extra acid. I'm assuming the acid is coming from your honey addition.
Yeah, probably.
So you might be adding a little more acid to the honey if you're back sweetening more, but you're pretty close to balance wise, just being fine.
Okay, cool. I'm glad you
And
like it.
the
I'm gonna I, next time I do this, I'm gonna use more tea lager.
I think that's a good.
I may even add just a hint more lavender to the mix.
I would, the other thing I would consider with this, we know this is a tea mead, but it doesn't present as a tea mead. If you want it to present as more of a tea mead, you might do a more potent black tea, like half and half with the Earl Grey Moonlight.
Okay.
Because right now, like we talked about, it presents mostly as vanilla. I would like a little bit more of the tea flavor to go, oh yeah.
Okay.
So I wouldn't, maybe half and half, maybe like one quarter oolong, three quarters Earl Grey Moonlight.
Okay.
The bergamot in here is not that strong either. So maybe like half Earl Grey Moonlight, half just a grow to Earl Grey would be a way to do it
Or
too.
may Earl Greyer has twice the bergamot in it.
Yeah, however you want to do
Yeah.
that.
But yep, again, this was an experimental batch, and I'm not unhappy with it, but I could do more with it.
Yeah, well then this is part of your growth as a bean maker is just saying, okay, well, this is first try. This is what we like, this is what we think could improve, and going from there. I mean, like we talked about, if you just set this into a competition as a vanilla mead, no one would bat an eyelash. No one would say, okay, well, yeah, that's not exactly what he was trying to do, was it?
Surprise. Okay, well, this time I thought we'd talk about labeling a little bit.
Right. We were talking about labels in the context of like sending into a competition, and you can't have like personalized labels, personalized bottle caps, things
No,
like
because
that.
they want everything to look uniform.
Right, but a lot of the fun of this hobby, some people really love to present just their own like take or their own like they really dress up the bottle, not only like the quality of the color of the mead, but the way that they'll do the label
Oh
and
man,
the
some labels out there are just exquisite. I mean,
yeah.
they're gorgeous. They're works of art. Tracy down in Texas, she's a graphic designer, and she takes great delight in making some of the most gorgeous labels I've ever seen to put on a bottle of wine that she just shares with friends. So, it's amazing. I mean, she's mentored me. She's a wonderful lady. But I tell you not, I kid you not, if I looked at her label and said, "I can't do that. I just can't."
The thing is, like, I don't doubt my own ability to like eventually come up with something that involved. My jealousy is the people with the talent to do that as quickly as they can to make it not a pain in the butt that spends. I would take an entire work week of like messing with a computer to get anything close to what Tracy did, and I guarantee she didn't do that
She did
for a
an hour or
single.
two.
Right, exactly. Like that level of talent and just the experience to do it. Oh, I'm so jealous of you guys.
And if you can do it, awesome. You want to know what Jeff and I do for labeling?
Generally speaking, the basic little like mail,
Stick on labels that are
right?
water soluble.
Yeah. We'll do I usually get like a printer paper page full of those. I'll write, the name of the mead or the what kind of flavors go into it. I'll write the day I bottled it and my estimation of the ABV, and that's pretty good.
Hey, on the one on the Earl Grey Moonlight here, I have a 2 by 3 inch label. It says Earl Grey Moonlight, and when I bottled it, and that's it. That's all I got. I mean, this is just for my personal enjoyment. My banana that I had a few weeks back says banana. It was chocolate banana, but all I thought it was banana.
Well, and to be fair, I don't even label some of my stuff sometimes. Like a lot of the stuff that I package in wine bottles, I get those little color shrinks. I know, oh, the green one with the little grape leaves on it, that's my Lambrusco from 2001, sorry, 2021. And the red one is my strawberry mead, and the purple one is Sheila's sangria. And I can just know by a glance like what color I use for what. I'm probably not going to reuse that color until I'm out of those bottles anyway, so
Yeah,
who
but
cares?
there you go. Yeah.
The same way with bottle caps too. That you can go to Bacchus and get like 12 different colors of bottle caps.
Everything from American flag colors to gold, green, whatever.
Yeah, the color changing hops that when it's cold it turns the right color. And like, okay, that's fun. I don't know why I need that, but that's fun, I
It's
guess.
fun. But the point is, on labeling, we recommend you do label in some fashion.
You kind of need to know what you're going to drink before you drink it. Otherwise, you end up like that, our mystery mead that
That almost killed me.
burned us.
That almost killed me. Yeah, that's that one. That one should have been had either a flaming phoenix or the Lake of Hellfire
At the
label
very
on
least, a little skull and crossbones.
it. Yeah, that would appropriate too. That was horrible. Oh my gosh, I still don't like thinking about that. But labeling is important, and whether you want to go into simply the matter of a water soluble label so you can reuse the bottles later, which is what we do. And, or if you want to go into a graphic design, and if you want graphic design for your labels, you can do this either yourself or you can literally go on like Fiverr. There's actually people categorized as wine label designers.
Sure, you can the I love the fact that there is so much democracy on the internet, but I, the fact that we need websites like Fiverr to like find people to do that is a little troublesome. But by the same token, like our the music you guys heard at the start of the show, we contacted a guy from Fiverr and paid him $25 to write us a little
An
music there.
intro.
Yeah, and
I love singing. I can't play an instrument to save my soul.
same. I'm my wife and I have occasional debates as to whether I'm actually tone deaf or just bad.
Yeah, I'm actually not bad at singing, but I've never actually taken the time to learn an instrument extensively.
Right. Yeah.
I'll diddle around with a guitar or a penny whistle or something, but.
And we live in such an age when there are so many different hobbies you could have. Like, if it catches your interest and you go with it, it's great to have a hobby. You
But
need hobbies as part of your human experience of enjoyment of life. It's not always going to be an instrument.
no, it's
That's
just,
the same way it's not going to be graphic design.
and but by the same token, if I had the option, I'd learn everything. Anyway, but that's not here to know. But so labeling. Now, actually, I do know a gentleman named Daryl, almost familial connections. He actually is a professional mead maker. He makes and sells his own mead. He goes to Fiverr, has them print a design, 500 labels for him, and he gets them for whatever, 25, 30 bucks, whatever it is.
Right. Well, and when you're he's doing it on a commercial scale, right?
Yeah.
So he has to submit that to the TTB and he has rules he has to follow there. As a home mead maker, you kind of need a size and you need to figure out where you're printing it. And you could print that on your home like inkjet color.
Ledger, whatever,
Yeah,
printer.
you could go to
And
like a website like I think Grogtag, or there's a number of them now that are all doing fancy vinyl labels and things like that. I mean, I think one of the options I was talking to you about that I thought about and never really bothered to jump the gun on was you can get a basically a fancy looking kind of a fill in the blank kind of a wine label that's Schaus Meadery. Kind of an idea or whatever. A lot of like the fancy line work around the sides and then some blanks as far as name and ABV and date and things like that. Just fill that in with a Sharpie for each bottle.
And then once you're done,
Right.
alcohol, rub it off, gone, use it again.
Yeah, your friend gives it back to you, you clean it up. Yeah, just reuse it every time.
funny, but it's actually more than Jeff and I need.
It's there are so many time-consuming steps to this process. The idea of fancy labels has been generally, if I want to label a mead, I'll either handwrite it on a label sticker that's made to go in an inkjet printer, or I'll pull that template up in my work computer's Word, do it real quick, and then run off 6 pages of those for, a 5 gallon batch of bottles.
Things you need on your label, though. You need the name, which could be descriptive. Or my son, he made a sarsaparilla mead not long ago. We tried it. He named it Yeehaw. He needs a name, something you know what's in the bottle.
It needs a unique identifier, whether that's, however you're going to notate that.
You need when you bottled it, because that's important for a lot of reasons. One, you need to know how long it's been in the bottle. And when you need to drink it by.
The other thing to consider is, like, hey, if this sits in a closet or a wine cellar for a year and a half, I pop open a bottle and it has turned. Okay, now I know, the Yeehaw mead that I made on February the 18th is probably bad, but
Yeah.
the Yeehaw mead that I made on March 20th may still have another month in it, for example.
So there you go. But it gives you identifiers of knowing when. And your ABV, your name, and your date is all you really, really need. Anything past that, you're kind of, well, bragging. Not bragging, but you're writing more than you have to. Like I said, on my chocolate banana mead, I simply have banana. That's it.
Realistically, some people like to show off with their labels. Some people, if you have, for example, hey, my wedding, I broke my usual rule.
Well, he had gorgeous labels on the
Yeah,
bottles. They were great.
we had my our wedding photographer gave us a free, like, what do I want to say? Like a not a, a an announcement kind of shoot, but we had a little pre-wedding kind of shoot with maybe a dozen photos that we took around the plaza at sunset. And there was just kind of an extra thing on top of our, hey, I'm going to come and photograph your wedding and do all that. But we had that a few months before the wedding, so I took those photos with the really bright colors, and he did a great job with those. I made some labels for the bottles. I sent those to a professional label making company that had printed them all on vinyl, and we had gorgeous little bottles in beer and wine available at the wedding.
Yeah.
For that kind of event, yeah,
Sure.
do
Go
it.
all out, man.
I will
It's
do
cool.
that.
But the only reason this came up is because labels are something we haven't covered. And are they important? To a degree, yeah.
Yeah. And I think this is one of those things that it's a personal thing. Chris and I have kind of come to the idea that, hey, we have enough information on our bottles with a little paper label, hand scribbled, that it's good enough for us. Some people, like Tracy, want a cute little koala on her eucalyptus mead bottle.
No. Show us a cute little koala in a batch of eucalyptus leaves with a sunset in the background and little cute little flowers around framing the name of the mead. Is that accurate? I don't know if she ever used a koala other than that. Yeah, it
You choose your level of engagement here. You kind of advance from that point and move forward, I guess, is the consensus we're coming to with this.
Yeah. Labels can be fun, but Jeff and I are more, is it taste good? We're good.
That said, you can go so many different rabbit holes here. Fiverr is a great source for people to do the graphic design if you're not capable of doing it. You can go to a printing company and print labels on, like, the vinyl stickers, so they're more durable and long lasting. If you don't want to do, like, the paper inkjet labels, and, like, not just bottle labels for bottles either, but that same idea of creating the vinyl stickers, you can also do. I've seen a number of companies do, like, keg labels or fermenter labels, so that you have, you can just Sharpie in, hey, this is my Blackberry. I started it with a starting gravity of 1090 on April the 28th, and we reached final gravity of 1012 on
June
July.
1st,
Yeah,
whatever.
exactly. And added The idea that you could Sharpie on that stuff onto a label as you're going, like all your nutrient additions, if that's the way you want to keep notes.
I use a spiral bound.
Yeah, I use a little note app on my phone
Yeah,
more
so.
often than not. But that's another option for labels that is totally doable for you. Go for it, dude.
Now, we've kind of gone over the label thing. Now, no shade to anybody whoever they want to do this. I'm more than happy to you be you. However, the next part of this thing is we're going to talk about hops, and this was actually a request. Hopping mead. Now, this is not something I do a lot of because I'm mildly allergic to hops. I'm a really fun date on hops.
He's a real cheap date on
I'm
hops.
really cheap date on hops. My first experience with a beer, I drank a beer, and it was like 12 ounce, and I felt smooth. I was the smoothest guy in the room. I was hot. I was intelligent. I'm neither of these things. The half a beer after that one, I couldn't see straight. So my effect of my hops in my body is I get drunk a whole lot faster. I avoid hops.
Yeah, so
So, Jeff, tell me about hops.
hops are obviously they are not exactly a flower. I use cones, but they are the flowering part of a hop plant. The hop plants are actually related kind of distantly to marijuana, things like that. They both have a very that characteristic resiny smell at times.
Okay. That kind of manky,
Depending on the type.
earthy thing. Okay.
So hops, we've kind of been aware of those for a long time. They really came to prominence and became a consistently like reused product for beer making.
Currently mead making too. I cannot
Yes.
tell how many ancient mead recipes I've seen with hops in it.
Not the least bit surprised, but they became like kind of an integral idea of beer making for a couple main reasons. Do you know what they are?
No
There's like
idea.
two like
I don't drink beer, so.
The two reasons that they are popular with beer making, one, it balances the inherent sweetness of the grain that they're using to make beer.
Okay.
So the little bit of bitterness you get from those, or a lot of bit of bitterness, depending on the recipe and the amount of hops you're using, that kind of evens it out and makes it more palatable. They used to use other things like this, mugwort or a handful of other, search gruit, gruit. You'll see all kinds of different herbs that they used in place of hops before they kind of figured out, okay, hops is kind of the best at this as far as like the amount and other benefits we'll talk about in a second.
But so hops is a bitterant more than anything else.
Half and half, roughly. But yeah,
Okay.
the one you're going to notice is the bitter.
Okay.
It adds a level of bitterness, and it also adds a number of other flavor contexts. It adds a number of other flavor components, especially more modern varieties of hops that they're coming out with these days, add more different flavor notes than they do just the bitterness. The other factor that makes hops an important addition to beer, the one that makes it the preference above all the other stuff that they used to use in gruit, preservatives.
Okay.
The idea of the India Pale Ale or the Baltic Porter, for example, those aren't brewed in India or the Baltic. Those are brewed in England for trade to India and to the Baltic.
Okay.
India Pale Ale, for example, very bitter, the style in general. There are, of course, a number of different takes on it that are way different, but they are shipping to, the British colonies and people that are overseeing trade and stuff like that in India. And so they need something that's going to sit in a ship cask and be preserved for a long trip.
Okay, gotcha.
Very bitter ale can do that because of the hops.
Okay. In beer making,
Right.
because I know for a fact that in America, if beer does not have hops, you can't call it beer. That's actually on the regulatory books.
That wouldn't surprise me. Similarly, if you go to Germany, there is a, it's centuries old now. I don't remember exactly the policy or procedure for it, but they have what's called, if I remember this right, and the linguist in me isn't completely butchering this, the Reinheitsgebot,
Okay.
which is basically like beer purity laws. And it basically says the components of a beer are water, grains and yeast. I'm sorry, water, grains, and hops.
Okay, hops.
There is an implication that yeast is involved in there, even though these are technically existing before the awareness of microbiological organisms.
Okay.
But the idea is that, yeah, yeast is included in there because it's
It's
kind of
fermented beverage.
necessary to get there.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Okay. Back to my question. How many types of hops, not so much are there as how many are used?
There's a lot. There are a number of different groups that are kind of developing their own strains, like
Course.
Yakima Valley, in the U.S. up in I want to say it's in Washington. They have like the biggest number of like different trial strains they've got. But you're seeing similar outfits in New Zealand a lot these days, a little bit in Australia, a little bit of France. Germany is another big hop producer, although they tend to do more traditional flavor stuff. You'll see a number of like trials and crosses coming from them. A lot of these are crossbreeding traditional hop plants with more wild strains or crossing traditional hop families, for example. I'm given to example to understand that like a lot of the New Zealand hops are coming from traditional noble hop strains, which the noble hops are kind of like the OG hops.
Okay.
They're the ones that if you're drinking a German beer, a traditional German style beer or Czech style beer, you're getting one of those four nobles. And I want to say that's the Saaz or the Zatecz. That's the Hersbrucker or the Hallertau. And there's another one in there. I don't think it's Perle, but it's yeah, Spalt. Spalt is the one.
Okay, because I saw my friend struggling, I quickly looked up types of hops online.
Spalt is the one I always keep forgetting about. It doesn't have a lot of flavor profile, but it is the it's kind of just a good baseline noble hop. And the noble hops are
Is this like the neutral hop, you'd say?
basically, yeah, this is an easygoing, it's kind of floral, it's kind of herbal, it doesn't throw a lot of weird funky stuff. It can be a bittering agent. It can be a just a smooth, easygoing flavor. They're widely used and widely applicable.
Okay.
If you don't know what hop to use, you need a little bitterness and a little bit of like an even kind of floral and herbal note to it. Dealer's
Spalt is your man.
choice. Yeah, dude, Spalt or Hallertau or Tettnang or Saaz. I love Saaz, but I had my first Czech beer when I was 18,
Okay.
19.
Legal and check.
Legal in Czech. There is a soft spot in my heart for Czech beer, and Czech beer all use Saaz, or they call it Zatec, but it's the German name versus the Czech name.
Well, anyway, so because I happen to be on the internet right now, I looked up how many types of hops are used in like 200. Said
That
200.
wouldn't surprise me. I mean, between commercial availability, the kind you find at your homebrew store, you're probably going to get three or four dozen tops.
Okay.
And again, we're getting into there are a bunch of different hops that are similar. There are a bunch of different hops that are unique. I find it's more useful to think of what do I want out of the hop? How do I want to get that? And then like the families, if you will, because there are some like standouts that are very unique, but a lot of the hops you can get similar stuff with something in the same family.
Okay.
So, for example, let's go to the first part, how to get what you want out of the hops. Sometimes you just want a little bit of bitterness to compensate for the
Sweetness.
sweetness of the honey,
Okay.
if you're just making a hopped meat. The way that we get bitterness from hops is not just sitting the hops in the water. You need to heat them. This is the boil step of the beer making process.
Okay.
And the reason for this is that heat transforms the proteins in the hop from an acid into a bitter profile. The heat will fold the proteins
Okay.
to make it change, right? It's the process is called isomerization. If you need your Scrabble word of the day that's gonna score you 70,000 points.
Okay, I'm never going to use that again. But okay, I thought the cooking of the grain is what made it better. Is it the hops that make it better, or is it the cooking that makes it better?
It's the cooking of the hops.
Okay.
So when we're talking about making beer, there are three different additions for hops. There is like the early edition, there is a later edition, and then there's like a you could call it a final edition, a whirlpool edition, or like a afterboil edition, if you will, if we want to include things like a hop stand or a dry hopping kind of thing like that.
Okay.
The early ones, the
Okay.
ones that like right at the start of the boil, usually you'll go for 30 to 60 minutes with those. That's where you get the most bitterness from. That turns the alpha acids into those bitter profiles. And so you get the most bitterness. If you're going for like an IPA, for example, you're going to throw a lot in there right up front.
Okay.
In later editions, like say, you know, we go 45 minutes and we've got 15 minutes left in the boil, we might throw a little extra in at that point. Those are going to be more for aroma and for flavor.
Okay. Other than bitter, what do you get out of the hops? As a general, I mean, take any of the nobles and tell me what you want to get.
So, noble specifically, you get a kind of a light floral and herbaceous note.
Okay.
It's not strong. That's kind of the point. These nobles are going into usually lagers, which are generally very clean ferments. They're very crisp ferments. You want a little bit of floralness, a little bit of bitterness, a little bit of that kind of that herbaceous. I don't want to call it minty, but it's a little bit like fresh smelling tasting. These
Okay.
guys are very light by design.
Okay. Now to roll this back to mead, how would you get the hops into the, you have to boil it for hops into the mead? Is that necessary?
I wouldn't boil the mead.
Just the hops.
I would boil the hops in your water with a little bit of honey. For whatever reason, the biotransformation of boiling the hops, from what I've heard talking to people that know much more about hops than I do, it helps to have a sugar source in there
Okay.
for that folding process. So if we're going to do like, let's say, hey, we're going to do the Mead House 8% mead.
All right.
And we're going to make it a hopped mead. And we want a bitter component to it. We don't just want like a dry hop. We want to have some of the hops be bitter. We're going to take our probably what, three quarters of a three quarts, 3 quarts of water. That's going to make up the start of our gallon of mead. We're going to take maybe half a pound of honey, maybe a quarter pound of honey, not very much at all. And we're going to throw in half an ounce to an ounce of the hops we want to use just for the bitter component.
Okay,
And
so
we're gonna
that doesn't sound like a lot of hops. I mean, are the is it volume wise a lot, or is it just
volume wise for a single that's a lot for a single gallon.
okay.
Yes. Yeah. My rule of thumb for dry hopping is generally like half an ounce to an ounce per gallon. For the boil procedure part, that's kind of a lot. But I'm just throwing out numbers for the
Okay, I'm
sake of, you know, having something. This is very much a by your taste and by experimentation kind of a thing. If you're going to do this for a boil, you're going to use a bittering specific hop like Magnum or some of the higher alpha acid ones for that purpose. You probably just want like a quarter ounce per gallon for a start.
Okay.
Anyway, we're going to bring this to a boil. We're going to let it boil with just a little bit of honey for at least a half an hour, if not an hour. Then we're going to let it cool naturally. And then we're going to mix our mead and we're going to ferment it on the bittered hops.
Okay.
So that.
You're gonna strain out the hops and then use the water.
Right,
Okay.
exactly. Yeah. So we've already got the bittering happening before the fermentation happens, kind of the same way we would do with a beer,
Okay.
right? More often than not, when I hear about hops being added to a mead, generally we're talking about a dry hop. This is like the latest of late additions. This you usually add hops during fermentation or shortly after fermentation.
Okay.
And this gives you a lot more of the flavor and the aromatic components of the hops, which are very dependent on strain.
Okay.
And versus
It's like putting in a wire ball and like a tee ball and throwing it in type of
you can
thing.
absolutely do that. Or you know, put them in a mesh bag like we do with any spice. It's you're doing a spice.
Okay. Okay, that's so if I don't boil it, I'm just getting a spice for or a spice and fragrance.
Right, yeah, you're getting the flavor and the fragrance, and that is where a lot of the newer ones are coming really interesting.
Okay, that's interesting. I hadn't thought of that. I mean, I've been avoiding hops simply because of my beer experience, to be honest.
If you're having bad experiences with hops and beer, you're not going to have good experiences with hops and mead.
Fair enough. I mean, my wife had to drive me home.
And hey, apparently, I have similar experiences with Delta 8 and seltzers because,
Yeah, well.
I'm just not doing that. And okay, well,
So, okay.
but
Dry hopping is you're not cooking it.
right, you are literally, you take a bag, you add my general rule, about 1 ounce per gallon of the hop or hop blend of your choice, and put it in the mead and let it sit for a week, 2 weeks,
Okay.
and then you pull
Now, generally at the 2 week mark, you're looking at off vegetals. We've
it.
talked about that before. Is that still going to happen?
It's any other plant matter. So the when you look at hops, when you go to the your homebrew store and buy hops, what you're generally getting are what's called T90 pellets. It looks like, if you've ever had a pet rabbit or other like herbivore pet, they usually get like the little alfalfa pellets. It looks pretty similar to that because it's design-wise, they basically like blend or process the hop petals or cones, they call them, into a powderized mass and use high pressure to extrude it into a long line. And as it extrudes, it kind of breaks off into little quarter inch chunks.
Pellets. Okay.
Yeah.
Rabbit food.
More or less, it looks like that. And it will break down into the powdery remains. So you need a fine mesh bag. But that way you've got a nice even like measurable amount to throw in there. You can also sometimes get whole cone hops. That's becoming less and less available in homebrew stores these days. But like, for example, if you want to grow your own hops, which is totally a thing you can do, and you
You've
can,
actually done that at one time.
I tried it and didn't really have the right ground, and apparently I probably should have added a lot more soil amendment and taken better care of like the drainage and things like that.
No, use a grow bag.
We'll see. I think they're growing both hops and grapes in front of Bacchus now too, which is fun and
Yeah,
interesting.
I saw that. I thought they've done a remodel there on the outside of the building.
They repainted at least.
Yeah, they repainted it, and it's a black building now. And I almost drove by it the first time I saw it. But they're also starting to set up that garage in the back. So that's going to be really exciting when they get that done.
Well, and they've been using it as storage space for the longest time. Jackie kept extra like cases of bottles and fermenters and stuff like that there just for, not keeping it in the
Store itself,
right.
yeah. They're actually looking at renting space for fermenters and brewers. That's for me. That's exciting.
Yeah,
All
that
right,
could be fun.
but about the hop. Okay, so. Dry hops are used for fragrance and flavor, and cooked hops are used for bitter.
Basically, those are general rules, yes. You can get some flavor and fragrance from like late additions to the hops, like last 15 minutes, last 10 minutes, last 5 minutes of your boil. You won't fold all of those proteins with heat to turn them bitter.
Fold.
Yeah, the heat will. If you look at this is a science thing. This is a biology thing. But your proteins, if they're exposed to heat, they literally have like these weird structures where they're held together by all these little bands and curly Qs and things like that. The heat is the thing that causes them to warp and deform. Usually they refer to that as folding because in like the textbook example, they literally fold in half the structure of these guys. And so that's how we talk about the isomerization of alpha acids into bittering compounds. How's that for a bunch of four-letter words?
It's totally you. It's totally you, man. All right,
Anyway.
so okay. What as far as mead goes. And beer is, we can talk about beer if you guys want. Let us know. It's going to be Jeff talking a lot. I'm asking a lot of weird questions because I have no clue. For the sake of mead, what I understand it'll make it bitter or have different flavors of florals or stuff like that. And it's actually more ancient mead making style simply because they used
And me.
hops for a lot of it.
Yeah.
They also used a lot of pine needles and briar and just whatever vegetable wouldn't kill you outright to throw in there. What does it do? I will probably never try a hopped mead personally.
I may give you a little tiny sip of mine for the sake of you trying something, but I
That's
will
fine.
understand that you're not going to go much further than that.
Yeah. What does that do to me? Because bitterance, counter, sweet.
Right.
So we're talking about a more neutral mead. It.
Plays into the balance. And the bitterant is actually also kind of tannic in that.
Okay.
It's not a strong tannin by any stretch of the imagination. It's not oak, but it plays to the balance. So it does some of the similar things that a tannin would do in that it, counteracts a little of the sweetness. It kind of chills and like buffs the sharp edges off of the acidity. Generally speaking, you get a lot of interesting flavors off of these. And this is the late additions, especially for newer hops hitting the market, whether it's like the West Coast hops that are very popular. Those you get, depending on the strain, you'll get some piney notes, more resinous notes. You'll get some citrusy notes to those, or you'll get kind of I don't want to say funky, but they can be a little strange.
Banky,
Not
almost.
manky, they are fresh.
Okay.
But like it's not minty, it's not resinous, but it is like a chewing on a pine needle, maybe.
Okay, I've done
I don't
that. So yeah, I
yeah.
get that.
That's kind of that family. New Zealand lately has been throwing out a lot of hops that have weird and fun tropical fruit notes, whether it's like passion fruit or pineapple or things like that.
I mean, I would love to try for that sake alone,
Right.
but I can only do so much.
Yeah, exactly. And like you mentioned before, there's probably like what 200 different
That was a
commercially.
quick search on Google, so yeah,
I don't
I'm going to
disbelieve it.
run with that.
Now, bear in mind, some of these are there is overlap because companies have their own hop varieties.
Proprietary
Exactly.
thingy.
So if you talk hops with people, one of the terms you hear is CTZ hops.
CTZ.
CTZ,
Okay.
which I think is Centennial. I forget what the T is, and the Z is Zeus. The
Okay.
CTZ hops family includes more than those three, if I'm not mistaken, but these are all very closely related hop strains that are basically like the same thing. Columbus, Tomahawk, and Zeus, that's right. And they're different names of hops given by different companies that are all essentially the same exact thing.
Okay, so
If you can't find a Columbus hop that you need for a recipe, you can throw in a Tomahawk or a Zeus and you'll get basically the same result.
wow, okay. I'm kind of curious where they got the Columbus Tomahawk and Zeus as their acronym, but I'm not going to go there. But so, all right, so hop mead is a thing,
Yeah.
so.
And that 8% mead that we've got up on our website, I think is a brilliant little palette on which to play with hops because it's pretty close to a beer. It's a little heavier than the average beer as far as an ABV level. It's nice, it's light, it lends itself well to being carbonated, I think, for sure. And if you're already hopping a mead, why not carbonate it and have a nice summertime drink?
Yeah, why not? I mean, I have no, I've learned just in the course of us talking about this stuff, I've learned that to appreciate carbonated meads. No reason you can't appreciate that too.
Yeah, for sure. So there's so many cool different ones to try. Like when I was working at Bacchus, there was one hop that we sold probably three times more than the next closest hop,
Okay.
Citra.
I would assume it'd be a citrus flavor coming
It
out.
is a strong citrus flavor, especially if you're using it for dry hopping, but it has enough alpha acids you could use it for bittering too. It's kind of like a single use hop. You can make what they call a smash beer.
Okay.
Single malt, single hop.
Okay.
Smash.
Smash. Okay. Nice. I mean, my daughter, as a chef, she tells me that if you want to brighten your food, add lemon zest or lemon juice. I mean, it brightens it almost automatically for citrus.
It's citrusy notes, and a lot of the West Coast styles of hops have citrusy notes. You'll get citrusy notes as well in the Australian and New Zealand one, but New Zealand especially these days tends to edge more towards tropical fruit style that they're releasing, which are so much fun. And then there's some weird ones out there that are also like throwing, I think Sabro came out a few years ago, and it's throwing like coconut notes.
Okay, that's bizarre, but
Yeah,
cool.
there's just wild different stuff. I like I in addition to Citra, Simcoe is another one that it's a little bit more piney, but it has some citrusy notes to it too. There's just so many different ones you can play with and kind of pick and choose. It's a great one to experiment with. Like, why not grab, go to your homebrew store, grab like a Kvike yeast pack, make a couple 1 gallon batches, one with one kind of hop, one with another kind of hop, just play, have
Yeah,
fun.
and on that note, I saw something online I was really happy about. They were talking about the different tastes with different yeasts, and he made a 10-gallon batch of base mead, and then the base mixture of honey and water, and then added all these in 1/2-gallon batches, all these 20-some-odd yeast to it to see how they worked. That seems extreme to me personally. I don't have that many containers of a consistent size. But yeah, that sounds like, why not, if you're hop friendly, give it a try.
Right. I mean, these are large scale experiments. You have to start somewhere because there are so many related ones. But I mean, if you like the sound of the New Zealand strains, grab some Muteka or some Mazaka. Try both of those. See which one you like more. If you like the West Coast, you know, there's Simcoe, there's Citra, there's Tomahawk and Zeus and all those guys.
Columbia.
Yeah, there's so many over there. You figure it out. And maybe you like the more mellow, like English ale styles. There's like Fuggles and East Kent Goldings and things like that.
Fuggle. That's so much fun.
See, obviously, when I was working at Bock's and Barleycorn, I'm assuming Bock's still has this issue. They have 55-gallon sacks of grain for beer.
It's
You
lovely.
think comes with 55-gallon sacks of grain? Mice.
Oh, geez.
Naturally, right? And
Yeah.
so part of your daily opening business is, okay, do we have mice droppings, mice damage? We need to put out new mice traps, or we need to check the mouse traps. I said we should go to the animal shelter up the street and get a little orange cat that's friendly to the customers, and we'll name him Fuggles. Now, because of the way that I think it's the county that does the business inspections, because we're selling food stuff, animals weren't going to fly at
That's
all.
not
No,
good.
it was ingest anyway, so it didn't go beyond that. But I thought it was fucking
That's
cute.
personally, I would keep a ferret at home and bring the ferret scented rags in. That tends to repel rodents. But there you go. Hops is something that I personally will never try, but Jeff has obviously done a little bit of work on. He's tried, and he makes beer, so.
And I've got a number of hops sitting in my fridge that I've just been waiting for an excuse to try. So I'll probably mix up a batch of something or other and play with that this summer too.
Well, thank you for joining us today. That was our that was almost a strictly show of what people asked
Right,
today for
yeah.
labels and this. And again, we will dedicate time to this thing. If you got any questions, please ask us. Once we get online with various streaming sites, give us a 5-star rating. We'd appreciate
Yeah,
that. And
reviews and ratings and just engagement in general is great. Especially if I know at this point we're growing as far as like the number of listens we get organically from you guys sharing your stuff. But like those ratings and reviews help us get to people that haven't been directly contacted by somebody that's listened, which is an even bigger growth thing for us.
it's huge. And we appreciate every one of you. Jeff, have a great day. It's been good drinking with you.
Yeah,
Take
absolutely.
care. Good night, all.